Hello, everyone. Joshua Gilliland here, one of the founding attorneys of The Legal Geeks. With me today is Thomas Harper, and we're going to discuss Star Wars Resistance, taking a deep dive into the issues presented in The Core Problem and The Disappeared. Thomas, how you doing?
I am absolutely wonderful, and I'm excited to talk about these. I feel like we're getting within a breath of the First Order as each of these episodes come out, and it's getting more and more exciting.
Yeah, we're probably about, what, 24 to 48 hours away from The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Just Poe's on his way to Jakku, and I'm not sure how much time elapses over that story, if it takes place over a day or two. I think it's probably a day with the way the story flowed. So yeah, we'll be interesting to see the cross play.
I will make a critique of the First Order. They did wait till the last possible minute to secure a pretty important fuel resource here on the Colossus. So bad on their military planners, but they did get it done.
This is true. And well, let's break this down. So let's jump into the core problem. And you know, there are a lot of things that happen in this episode, not all of which are legal for us to really take a deep dive into. You know, we have TIE fighters doing flyovers. We have Poe getting aboard, and sure, there's probably some port entry issues with somebody sneaking on board. So, you know, definitely a few things there to get into. But what really takes off is when we get to the flight and they see the cored out system missing a star. I think there's a good issue of genocide on that unnamed moon that we are introduced to.
Yeah, and you're talking the one they physically land on, right? Which they didn't give a name for that moon.
They didn't give a name. You know, we see what could be a town square, maybe a temple. There are blaster marks. The planet's starting to freeze because the star is gone. And there aren't bodies, but it looks like all life there was wiped out.
Yeah, and I tell you, it brought an immediate vision of the Star Wars Rebels episode where Ezra Kane and Kanan go to the old Sith temple. It just sort of evoked that imagery, and they have the showdown with the Inquisitors. But I think that you're right on that. This was whoever was living there more recently. In fact, Kaz picks up a toy along the way. I think a little pet Tuca doll. And so it's clear that somebody was living there. And you've got, to your point, some living proof of at least some of the atrocities that the First Order is committing sitting right there on the Colossus. The two little kids that you've seen sort of interspersed through this season, Cal and Ayla, the brother and sister that live down in the engineering hold. You know, they've talked on repeated occasions about what the First Order has done. So it's not a far stretch at all to assume that they're wiping folks out. Maybe getting rid of witnesses? I don't know.
There's all kinds of levels to their nefarious behavior, whether it's purification, their view of it, to just genocide for the sake of genocide, testing their weapons, getting ready for their big move. It's evil and sinister. I mean, it's trying to think of historical comparisons gets interesting where you see those doing empire building. And, you know, recent examples, there are many. You know, you could look at either Imperial Japan or Nazi Germany. Those are, you know, fun punching bags to look at for cruel behavior. But you also can look at activities from the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc countries with things that they did as well.
Yeah, and I, you know, from a legal standpoint, even though there's not, this is still a Cold War at this point between the Resistance of the New Republic and the First Order, you still can't go commit genocide. That's sort of a standing rule, whether or not there's an outbreak of any kind of armed conflict whatsoever, the international community tends to frown on that sort of stuff. The unique twist here is that the resistance obviously doesn't have the manpower nor the legal authority to patrol the galaxy, so to speak. They're not really the entity. They're the entity to keep tabs on the First Order. That's the role that they filled in this time period. But it's really the New Republic's responsibility to be looking out for this sort of thing. And this is probably a discussion for another podcast, maybe a panel. But I think it's a fair question about whether the New Republic abdicated their responsibilities to the larger galaxy by not having, either a physical presence, maybe not on a planet like Castellan itself, since it's so far flung, but at least regionally positioned assets, military or otherwise, that could respond to these sort of things. And then you combine that with a failure to take this sort of threat seriously. And you see that in the Bloodline book. It's touched upon in the Phasma book in terms of, and even in the Poe Dameron comic, where the Resistance is actively gathering information about this stuff and nobody really seems to be listening.
There are two issues there. One is, what's the legal status of the combatants? So you get the issue of Resistance and First Order, because neither are nation states.
Correct.
But the First Order is different than just, say, a giant terrorist group, because they're wearing uniforms and they follow military-type procedures. So they're different than some other threats, whether it's full-blown nation state or versus something, say, like an Al-Qaeda or an ISIS. Mm-hmm. That they're different. They operate like they're a nation state, but without a nation state. So that's weird. But the other part that I think of is pre-World War II. When Germany started rearming, it was France's responsibility to go in and crush the Germans, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. And on that level, the New Republic is a lot like France during, Germany's buildup of there's a threat, and they don't do anything until it's way too late. And, this is where Star Wars has wonderful foreign policy lessons of engagement versus isolationism versus maintaining peace, because you just don't have peace exist. It's maintained. Real politic versus ideal politic. I mean, there's a lot of fun things there that are just a step away from us being attorneys, unless you think in terms of lawyers end up in administrations or secretaries of states or presidents type application. Mm-hmm. But I really, the New Republic being asleep at the switch and unwilling to address the threat, there are many examples of that historically.
Yeah. And I would argue that it's, you might say that they don't know about some of this stuff going on. It's clear that Poe is seeing this sort of stuff for the first time. They're still assembling intel, but it's clear. I think they've passed along clear intel to the New Republic that human rights violations are going on at the hands of the First Order. Whether or not that's a full scale genocide is another question. But you look at, I go back to the early 90s in Somalia. And the events and sort of the, it wasn't an all-out, it wasn't a lot of aspects of full civil war, but you had other aspects that were involved in terms of famine and whatnot that were causing widespread chaos and negative effects on the civilians there. The UN, it was all happening and unfolding in front of the UN's eyes, and it wasn't until thousands upon thousands of Somalis died that the international community finally gets involved. And I think you can heat that on the Galactic or the New Republic Senate here, that it shouldn't take reports that an entire population has been wiped out for them to marshal forces. And at the very least, go investigate this stuff with some seriousness.
Agreed. The other example that I think of is the 1996 Republican presidential primary, where the issue of Kosovo came up. And Senator mm-hmm. Dole was, let's go in and kick some ass, and because fought World War II, I've seen bad guys before, this guy's bad. And you had Alan Keyes, you know, take the position of like, what, they're not all dead. It's not genocide yet. It's like, yeah. Okay, it's attempted genocide there, big guy. We shouldn't have to wait for it to be completed before we take action.
Yeah, it's one of those few crimes, few war crimes even, that there is no gray area. I mean, wholesale murder is not okay under any circumstances.
The other issue this raises, I'm a fan of the International Spy Museum podcast, and this really does highlight the utter failure of the New Republic's intelligence network. Did they have spies doing threat assessments, watching out for anything? And if they are blissfully ignorant or just don't care about the reports that they're getting, that's bad on all of them. But it's tough to point blame when they're all dead. So that's the other issue of, I mean, the government responsible is wiped out. So it's not like we can say, I told you so, because they're gone. They be dead. All Hosnian Prime. And that's bad. So it's really tough to take anyone to task for this, which, you know, then leads us back to the aggressors of, okay, the peacekeepers were morons, which is why they're all dead and why these guys have free reign now. It doesn't excuse them that they're really the bad guys, and they're effective bad guys. You know, this is one of the perks of resistance. The First Order is ruthless and organized. There's no bumbling. There's determination. They are somehow well-funded, and they know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. And I, you know, caught in the middle of all this, not inadvertently, but you've got Kaz that probably unknowingly has put himself in a really precarious position legally, based on his spying. Obviously, he knows he's in danger of getting caught by the First Order, and they might kill him if they find out who he is. But, you know, generally, espionage is not looked kindly upon by warring factions, even in a Cold War. And, you know, ordinarily, a combatant who is caught and is engaging or is in the act of espionage does not have the same protections in some cases as a normal combatant that would otherwise have a more robust set of protections, whether a prisoner of war status has been triggered or not. And that includes being tried, like being tried and potentially executed for this stuff. It's sort of being on a fast track. And I can appreciate that he's got Poe to assist him with it, but Poe's not a New Republic officer anymore. And, you know, Poe has a tremendous amount of experience, and not that Kaz doesn't have skill, but I would call Poe's skill more refined and battle tested. And meanwhile, Kaz is a kid, you know, he's a kid that before he accepted this mission was fighting with his dad about normal, you know, young guy sort of stuff, you know, 18 to 21 year old problems that you have. And all of a sudden he's thrust into a pretty precarious position here. So he likely doesn't realize any of that, because I doubt he got a legal brief on any of these things before he just accepted this mission while he was starstruck at Poe. But if he ever got caught, he could be in some real trouble. And the First Order would be well within their rights to treat him differently than the average POW.
And I remember doing research on how we handle spies. And that goes back to the Revolutionary War. If there's a military tribunal, and depending on what they did, you know, like with how they could be prosecuted and punish. So there's definitely something there. He's not committing acts of sabotage.
No. Well, and you and I are going to get into a little bit more of the First Order's brand of due process for people in just a minute here, but I think it's safe to say that Kaz is not going to get a full fair shake in terms of presenting a defense or anything like that. I think if he ever did get caught, he'd be on the receiving end of a blaster bolt pretty quickly.
You mean the organizations that assigns people to behead traitors?
Or just sucks up a sun to blow up an entire system? That organization. I don't think they're going to be interested in assigning you a competent defense counsel, giving you a trial, or, you know, all those.
It raises wonderful issues of how do they recruit? And won't we, because there's no HR department clearly in the First Order, and they just, you take it. Well, let's talk about how they are wonderful humanitarians with the disappeared. Just some highlights from this episode. We have the First Order openly recruiting on the Colossus. They've canceled races. They've grounded flights. We're starting to see Tam is, you know, quite down with fascism, and that's super disturbing hearing her go, well, there has to be sacrifices to maintain order and safety. Do you really think that way? Do you really think that's a good thing to say? They don't like freedom of speech, and there's some big, big due process issues.
Well, they're all about freedom of speech if it aligns with what they need it to be. So if you're out there waving the First Order flag or, you know, posting their recruitment hollows up around your bar, all for it, but not so much on the critical speech there.
No. So let's, those who criticize, so we get, why am I blanking on his name? Hype, and Aunt Z are critical of the First Order. And both get thrown into a shipping Connex box to be taken off world to God knows what horrible end. And Aunt Z states discussing her freedom of speech, she'll say what she wants, when she wants, and as loud as she wants. She's right for two out of the three of those. As loud as I want, not so much. There's still time, place, and manner restrictions on free speech that you can't walk around with a bullhorn at 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, yelling at neighbors. Stuff like that we frown upon as a civil society.
Yeah.
But you could stand in the middle of the park and give a speech at 2 o'clock in the morning, depending on what local laws are. So there's a little bit of that. There are limits to speech of you just can't throw your own parade and walk down Main Street screaming at traffic. It's like, I'm saying what I want. It's like, you don't get to walk around traffic doing that. If you're going to do a parade, you have a form to fill out. And you don't get to be as loud as you want because you're disturbing the peace at that point in time. People have their right to ignore you. And you don't have a right to walk around with a bullhorn and yell in people's faces.
What's interesting is I don't remember seeing Aunt Z really take this hard a stance on anything. She's always been sort of the business-focused character where it's like, I don't even want you standing at my bar if you're not contributing to my bottom line. You're either buying a drink or you're out of here. And then all of a sudden she takes this political stand against the First Order's little recruitment poster, which, by the way, I was a little confused because I guess they don't get all their stormtroopers from child soldiers. So their indoctrination program must have a different element to it that we haven't seen a lot of, where they're bringing in older recruits.
I interpreted that as new, that they're on the move and now they're openly recruiting. That's the way I interpreted that.
Yeah. Well, given what happened in, let's see here, two episodes before this, what was it, the new trooper? I can't remember the name of the episode. But it's pretty clear that they have some kind of mind wipe or mind conditioning, reconditioning program that sounds pretty awful, like making your brain like a cassette tape. Like, let's just record back over all this stuff. So I guess it's possible that they could take you as an adult, and assuming you were ready to sign on the dotted line for the first order, just go ahead and conveniently get rid of all those pesky memories that you have.
It's lobotomizing their own troops. And we don't just order frontal lobotomies on people. That's a judicial hearing on whether or not
I can confirm that's the case.
Yeah. All the mandatory fun you had. Yeah. That's yeah. Nope.
You get willingly indoctrinated.
There are certain phrases, different branches of the service get used to yelling to show support, whether it's oorah or
it's hua in the army. So and I noticed this in my we talk about like subtle brainwashing. In my most recent stint of duty, I was down at Fort Benning recently, and you know, the moment you put on the uniform and somebody asks you just a question, like, are we excited to be here today? It's funny how quickly that kicks in. If you and I are having a conversation now normally and you ask me something like that, I'd be like, yeah, you know, I'm pretty excited. But it's something about getting back in that mode. It, you know, that little switch in your brain gets flipped. So the United States Army doesn't need a mind reconditioning program. The one it's got works pretty well.
it sounds like people all going to a sporting event and everyone's wearing their jerseys or baseball gloves, and everyone's got their hat on and they're ready to go because, yeah, it's fun. Yay. We're all on the same team. Oi. Good times.
You also see them, I wanted to raise this issue. So before you even see them get thrown into that that shipping container jail, whatever you want to call it, you see this seizure of property that Hypheizon's racer gets impounded. And not just that, but it based on what the stormtroopers are saying, all of the racers are being impounded because they've now decreed that racing is over on the platform. The aces have been told to stand down. And I don't necessarily think there's a major issue with, you know, ordering that these races are down. They've made some sort of platform security argument about that. But those racers are individually personal property. That much is pretty clear from the show so far. What do you think about their lockdown of those ships?
I don't think the lockdown's legal. I think governing airspace, you absolutely have to have regulations for when people can fly, traffic patterns. We have a giant code of federal air regulations on, so we don't have crazy chaos of everyone trying to build homemade airplanes and go fly around into each other. So, yeah, that's one issue. Grounding everything, that's the only way on or off the station. Those are problems right there. That would get into the constitutional right to travel between interstate, which you have a right to do. You then throw in the personal property. That it's a taking. It's like what's the basis to lock down and confiscate personal property? There is none, other than we're taking control now. And, you know, like, again, red flag of that never ends well. So got issues with that of these aren't the good guys. So, yeah, it's one thing to have reasonable regulations so you don't have mid-air collisions. It's another thing to install a totalitarian state.
Well, yeah, and I go back to, you know, not all of us, we're not all Harrison Ford, where we own our own little fleet of fighter planes and stuff that we just crash on golf courses and highways at will. But in recent years, you have seen a real uptick in drone ownership. And you see this interplay that the government absolutely has a right and routinely does regulate drone flights, right? You can't just fly your drone over the airport. There's all sorts of places that you can't fly these things. But what you don't see is police officers or government agents knocking on your door and taking your drone or locking it, like bolting it to the floor. And so that's the real issue here. And I think you're spot on. Unfortunately, Hikvision is not there to, they've conveniently limited the amount of or his method of complaint, since he's locked in a shipping container and about to get taken off world.
Which it almost looks like a cattle container, you know, type of thing, of that livestock would be in it. You know, the air vents aren't low, so it's not like people can walk in and look and see like, hey, there are people in there. It's they're high up, but they definitely have vents, so it's not airtight.
Yeah. So when, that means, and poor Hikvision goes from being like ace pilot to stepping stool pretty quickly. It's like an unceremonious drop.
Did he fight in the rebellion?
I don't think he was. I don't know that I'm clear on that, but based on his age, I don't know that he was old enough, because he seems definitely younger than Yeager.
Okay. Because I don't remember, because there was, I was thinking back to the first episode, I was like, did they mention him fighting the rebellion, or was he just after?
No, I think he was too young, because you've got the folks that we knew, that we know how to roll there would be Yeager, Doza, and Griff. So we know those three. I may be blanking on some others, but Height definitely seems a little younger than all of them.
Okay, that makes sense.
I don't know, it's hard to age a Rodian, so I could be completely off.
I'm sure we could dig deep on Wikipedia to see, you know, his in-depth backstory of if there was any military service. Anywho, a lot going on there. So let's talk about putting people in shipping containers, because, again, shipping containers should raise a red flag for anyone student of history. This is literally first they came for the Rodian, and then they came for the bartender, and I did nothing story. And there's what crime did they commit? It's one thing if
what law? You're exactly right. What law are they breaking here?
It's one thing, like, I tried punching the cop. Like, okay, that would you'd do a night in jail for that. Mm-hmm. But this isn't, you know, like, this was his property was being illegally taken. He asked what was going on, and they threw him in a shipping container. With Aunt Z, it was, I don't want your crap, your propaganda in my bar, get out. And she gets thrown in a shipping container in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Both of those, different fundamental rights at issue here. One is, this is my property, get the hell away. The other is, I'm saying what I want because I have a freedom of speech. And because they don't like her speech, they throw her in a shipping container. Both of those are gross constitutional violations.
And you can't just solve all your problems by throwing them into a shipping container. That's the moral here.
No, it's like you actually do have to clean out your closet. You can't just ignore the mess. And they, well, on one level, yeah, they are taking care of the problems. They're getting rid of them.
Yeah. To your question about what law are they enforcing, what do you think about their standing to enforce some sort of martial law? I mean, they haven't, that I've seen, declared anything like that, but it certainly seems like that's how they're operating.
Well, they're definitely operating under a martial law type situation where they are the law. I mean, this is the Sylvester Stallone model right now, and it's appalling, because the First Order isn't a government entity. At best, they were mercenaries contracted by Doza to fight pirates. That's at best. At worst, this is, I've said it before, it'd be like a local government hiring the Klan to do law enforcement. And that should scare the hell out of everyone. And going like, this isn't okay. These guys are all in white. You don't see their faces. You know, they're stormtroopers. That name was picked for a reason to highlight they're the bad guys. So no, there's no legal justification for what they're doing. Now, this isn't an issue of like, whoa, this bar is super unsanitary and you're running a gambling ring and throwing other bad things that could happen, you know, in a bar with, oh, look, prostitution, you know, just throw in all that. None of that's happening at Aunt Z's, but if there was some colorable argument like, hey, we're shutting this puppy down, it's no, they got rid of her so they could put up recruiting propaganda.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that I go back to, we were talking about the abdication of responsibility for the New Republic earlier, and in on that note, I place a lot of blame on Doza. Like, admittedly, he was in a tough situation that was just all manufactured behind the scenes by the First Order, of course. But you see how rapidly the mission creep has happened. And it's intentional on the First Order part. Let's all be honest about the obvious here, that the First Order obviously wanted that narrow window. Like, hey, we'll make the pirate attacks that we set up stop. We'll provide you this safety and security. And then, you know, very quickly they take over the platform. But look how quickly, like, pull yourself out of that amount of knowledge and just look at it from Doza's standpoint. He agreed, they're getting attacked by the air from pirates, and they think they might have a pirate spy aboard that's helping coordinate these attacks and potentially sabotage some of the defense systems. So the First Order comes in, they agree to provide air support. Cool. You got your TIE fighter patrols. And they agree, at least initially, to provide some stormtrooper patrols to try to root out this spy. You and I have discussed in a previous episode of this podcast the quick left turn that took in terms of them shaking down random citizens. But now here we are, what, 2-3 episodes later, showtime, you're talking, you know, maybe a week or two at best, if not a matter of days. And all of a sudden they've got a full-on combat presence that's growing by the day, by the hour, in fact, on this platform. And meanwhile, I don't know what Doza could theoretically do about all this, but he opened the door to it all.
Agreed. The appeasement never works. And, you know, the First Order just wanted breathing room. You know, like, we've seen this, and we've seen, you know, that kind of nefarious conduct of we just want X, and then we'll be happy. Well, they're not. They're making a giant power grab for whatever their end game is.
Yeah. Well, and he, as not just as a commander of that facility, but he's got prior military experience. We don't know exactly how much or what, but he was a former military officer in the Empire. We've seen his uniform hanging up. And I refuse to believe that he was completely blind to the possibility or completely blind to their real ulterior motives here. But, I guess desperation prompts some desperate decisions in some cases.
Oh yeah. It's they went for him where he's weakest, trying to hurt his daughter. I did like the fact that he went to Yeager for help to figure out, okay, it's the dads going like, well, we screwed this up, so we got to fix it.
Yeah.
Or everyone's going to die. So
when that last scene though, like, really sets it. If you were remotely under the impression that the pressure was going to ratchet down, that all went out the window. The moment you see Kaz come up, he's like, hey, you'll never believe. And then they found the fireball complete with all the blaster marks and stuff from its last engagement against Major Von Reg.
Yeah. It's, they didn't kill all the TIE fighters. Like, that was it's like, you're gonna have to ditch the ship, dude. That baby can't come home.
Maybe give it a new paint job. I don't know.
There was a lot that could happen. I mean, wild cards are a TAM, because if they she's tough to trust. I understand her feeling like left out, but the fact she seems to be embracing fascism really fast is grounds for concern of, do you bring her in? Because she seems too cool with fascism.
And she might squeal.
Yeah. That's a problem, because she seems to be too much of a First Order sympathizer.
Yeah. I mean, I think her heart's in the right place. I think if she were more than anything, I get the sense that she feels hurt by being on the outside of this information flow that she knows is happening. She's not dumb. So, and you see that in the beginning of this last episode where she's kind of questioning Kaz a little bit about all the like blaster marks and stuff on the fireball. And, you know, clearly he gives like a bogus story, but I would like to think that once Yeager does decide to bring her in, or Kaz for that matter, she'll see the error in her ways, or it may be one of those situations where she really does have to see the First Order for what they truly are before she makes the turn.
She's already seen them try going after kids. I mean,
That's true.
what, I mean, you really,
She's a tougher sell, maybe. I don't know.
whoa, those kids ended up in cages, but none of the kids I like ended up in cages, so I'm fine.
Those are the two strange kids that hang out with the turtle people in the bottom level. We don't care about them.
They're just refugees.
Yeah.
They wouldn't hurt people I care about. And again, that's the problem when you don't apply rights and value life equally. So, yeah, I'm a little, Kaz needed a better cover story. He could have said, it'd been a long time since I went out and did target practice. I had fun in an asteroid belt. That would have been fine. Like, he could have said something along
Yeah.
those lines. Have more truth in your cover story, so that way it's like, oh yeah, went out and been a long time since I've done this. So
Yeah. When there was a debate the other day that brought up an interesting point about his status and his constant job requirement to lie. He's on that platform with his real name, and I get it, the galaxy is a big place, but he's also not the most incognito, melt into the crowd type person because of who his dad is as a New Republic senator. And the point was made, someone made the point that I think is a very valid one, that he could just be chalked up as this screw up that's constantly having to have his dad fix all of his problems. So it's not inconceivable that he would have been booted out of the New Republic military and then cast off all the way to this fuel platform. So, the joke was that if we're being honest with ourselves, if Kaz picked his like a spy name, it'd be like AC McAcerson or Pew 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 Face, something along those lines.
yeah, he's terminally klutzy, and what's ironic, he's not bad at tactical plans because it
No.
wasn't like, let's just get these guys out, and he actually thought ahead to go like, the First Order will tear the platform apart looking for you. That's brilliant because we don't normally see characters in an animated story, let alone live action, think beyond the next scene. So,
Yeah.
good job there, big guy.
And you know what? To your point, I appreciate that he's not good at everything. How many heroes, other than maybe Han fumbling with Luke's lightsaber in Empire, do we see that have trouble with a lot of stuff, including and especially basic sort of military skills? I mean, Luke is a crack shot with a blaster, as is Leia, as is Lando, and pretty much anybody on the Rebel side. But I really appreciate the fact that, like, Kaz is a great pilot, not such a great shot with a pistol. And that's absolutely real life. I'll tell you, I like my wife Marissa is a fantastic shot with the M4, the M16. I'm probably not the one that you want going through the door first or taking on a sniper target. Maybe if you give me a shotgun, I'll be okay. But that's it. It's real life, right? Different soldiers, different airmen, sailors, Marines have different skill sets. And so what some people chalk up as just like goofy kiddie stuff with him, kind of wildly firing his blaster, that's real stuff. That's real life. I'm living proof of it.
I had a really good friend at Davis who was a Marine, and served during Desert Storm. Mm-hmm. And they talk, he told a wonderful story about the Harrier pilots that were, you know, in the Corps. And that he and his buddies thought, like, God, what a bunch of Poindexters. And then they were in some battle and those, you know, Poindexters saved their butts. Yeah. And they never referred to them as yeah. that again, because it's like, no, they saved us and we are really grateful. And so, yeah, everyone has their job. Everyone has their specialty.
Yeah.
And so I do concede that he doesn't need to be good at everything, but the terminally klutzy is, I worry about the boy. So, yeah, it's like, go walk along these pipes. So I got to say, I'm very happy with CB-23.
I like her. Yeah, I think it's her.
It's
a female. Yeah. No, I like CB. I will say that I don't think it's BB-9E is the first order droid you see in The Last Jedi, but the BB-9E type of droid that you see with, he pulls out his little electro rod or whatever and threatens somebody. Like, I like that little droid.
Yeah, he's got a, he's a mean little guy. Just
little jackass.
I'll cut you.
That little, yeah, and the, you know, the fight that he has with Kaz, where his head pops off as he's trying to prevent him from taking the data stick. It's just, it's good stuff. Yeah. Anybody that says this show is, you know, too kiddie or is just for kids, you got to dive a little deeper than that or loosen up a little bit.
And it's Star Wars. Be grateful we have it. And yeah, it's designed for, you know, kids to watch and for their parents to watch with them and enjoy it. Like, that's the perk of it. As I've said before, I'm grateful for any of the Star Wars we have. Yeah. The only ones I haven't watched just because of time and energy are the Lego ones. And
yeah, those sit in a weird, they call it canon adjacent. I watched the first season of Freemaker before time constraints just got, I had to cut it. But it was really well written. It was very, very funny. I have not watched the, what is it, the Adventures series, the one where it's kind of involves some of the characters we know and love. But Freemaker was very good.
I recall watching one episode, and there was some great slapstick in it.
Yeah.
And there was an exchange between Yoda and, I don't remember which character, you know, commenting on the lack of female characters. And Yoda's replying, yeah, that's weird. We'll fix it next time. Well done. Well done. Yeah. Own the mistake. Acknowledge
it. It is very self-aware.
Yeah, that's, we need to do something. So yeah, lots of good stuff there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the only one I haven't, and again, it's just, I don't think I'm in the right demographic. I don't have kids. I'm, you know, but if I did, that probably would be something you'd watch with a 5-year-old, and the parents would enjoy it with the kids.
Well, again, you made this point already, but I will reiterate it. Rewind 9-10 years ago to the late 2000s when all we had was Clone Wars, and we were all hoping for maybe a Blu-ray release with some deleted scenes that folks had maybe seen on some bootleg VHS at some point. But that was all we had, and now we live in a time where there is literally not enough time for most folks to keep up with all the material. I read all the comic series and obviously keep up with Resistance and look forward to the Clone Wars returning. But the fact that it's a chore to keep up with all the Star Wars that's coming out now is really purely awesome.
Yeah, it's nice having something to look forward to. It's like, I look forward to Sunday nights. I look forward to Thursday nights for Star Trek Discovery. I'm like super happy this time of year because it's like, wow, all the things that I loved from childhood that have meaning are well written and they're on. And there was, it's still in rumor mill, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, the possibility of a live-action Obi-Wan Kenobi limited series. Did you see that story go around the internet the other day?
I lost track of the number of rumors that I've seen. Was it the Rose Tico series, the Boba Fett? I did see the Obi-Wan, and if there's any truth to it, I think that story, if it's going to focus on him on Tatooine, would work well as a limited run. I don't, maybe more so than a feature film even.
Yeah, I lean that way as well. I mean, I would be happy with either. I would be happy with a blowout Obi-Wan Kenobi movie that's Seventh Samurai type.
Yeah. You know,
like, let's make it as much tribute to those old Japanese samurai movies and just have a rip-roaring good time.
Yeah.
Limited series could be fun as well because they could do just a little bit more, but have it be 3 hours or four hours. And, you know, it doesn't have to be 10.
Tales from Tatooine.
Yeah. And, you know, like his journal that Luke reads throughout the comic.
It just could be, bring that to life.
That could be super fun. I would be happy with a live action film or a series on Disney Plus. Both would make me happy. I think I'd prefer a movie, but I would be grateful for a TV series because of they could take a deeper dive into some issues. Yeah. And I think that's part of the strength of the TV series is they're able to dive deeper.
Absolutely.
Like, for example, it's like, I love the character of Finn, but we haven't seen enough of him. And there's there's a wonderful issues with him as a former stormtrooper who shook off the programming and refused to commit a war crime. The other child soldiers who grew up conditioned to be in the First Order, they're in the same boat. That's worth exploring, and I don't know how much you can do in a movie because of it's a movie.
Yeah.
Clone Wars was able to dive into a lot of deep issues over three episode arcs. That could be.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, look at the Domino Squad arc from Clone Wars, where you follow Fives and Echo and Cut Up and the rest of Heavy as they go through their training. I mean, you could have something similar to that. You've seen peaks of it. There's the famous scene in Force Awakens where he gets called a traitor by his former, a former squad mate of his. And then there's the hilarious deleted scene in The Last Jedi. If you haven't watched it, you absolutely should right now. But he gets recognized by another stormtrooper in the elevator aboard the Supremacy and aboard Snoke's ship. And they have this exchange where the stormtrooper concludes that he got promoted to an officer. And he's like, that's awesome, sir. And yeah, so there's a lot of material there. But I'm absolutely with you. I'm also for getting into characters, whether it's Finn or anybody else, that go sort of outside the beaten path. Because we have seen, I love the character, but we've seen a lot of Obi-Wan. And, you know, if they're going to be making a series like that, I'm all for getting into to the background of another character that has gotten less attention. Give me a Padme miniseries.
There are good options. I won't go into details because I don't believe, because they're those who love the prequels, but I was in the generation that was disappointed by them. And I would love to see Kenobi on his own. There's no order. It's just him.
Yeah.
Doing the long watch on Tatooine with an adventure. I do think that could work well because I've enjoyed what I've seen in the comics. We've talked about potential with Andor, the potential with the Mandalorian, and we'll see what we get. But this is a wonderful time to be a fan.
Yeah.
And with that, we can now go public with what you'll do at Celebration, right?
I can make a shameless plug. If you're going to come out to Star Wars Celebration in April, I can now announce that I will be hosting a panel on the military of Star Wars. It's going to be on Friday at 1:30 on the Star Wars University stage, but it should be a lot of fun. We're going to get into some really nerdy stuff.
Fantastic. Yes, yes. Do we have anyone to talk about how aircraft carriers work and are used, and they don't have to have their planes in visual sight in order for them to work? Are we going to get into that, or
we'll dive into everything we can in 45-50 minutes that we have?
That's awesome. I please record the audio. Look forward to hearing that.
Absolutely.
I can't say what we're doing at WonderCon, other than we'll be at WonderCon for some things very cool. So early March, we'll be able to announce that when the schedule goes live. But we can say we will be there. And that's all I can say about that. but you know, super excited about how Celebration goes for you. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So with that, everyone, thank you for tuning in. We do love talking Star Wars, and you probably have noticed that Thomas and I do love Star Wars a lot.
A little bit.
Just a little bit. And a large t-shirt collection and toys and would completely are good evidence. So with that, everyone, thank you for tuning in, and stay geeky, America.